So how was that
for you? Were you able to note or be aware of the feelings or moods as well? That last minute or two where I asked you to note whatever feeling was present, what were the kinds of feelings that you noted? Just give the names. Sadness?
Sleepiness?
Sleepiness?
Quiet?
Excitement?
Excitement?
Worry?
Restlessness?
Restlessness? Fear?
Calm?
I found myself feeling like I didn't feel anything, but I was looking for something.
Mm-hmm. So then you could note quiet or empty. There's always something that's there, even if it's nothing. What?
Noting.
Did you get a sense in doing that, even when it's subtle, that it's possible still to give a name to it and to become aware of what the inner experience is? You can try again. Just note empty or whatever if that happens.
I have trouble putting names to certain feelings.
If the name doesn't come easily, don't go looking through the dictionary or the thesaurus or whatever. Just note feeling. And generally names will come, and if they don't, it doesn't matter. What's more important is that you're just present and notice that it's there and when it changes. This gives you a whole new dimension of practice to work with beside the breath and the body. Now, sounds, and even more than that, the sensations. And as I said, someone said fear, someone said worry, someone said sadness, people also said calm or happiness or excitement. If there's unfinished business, if there's sorrow or there's grief or there's lack of forgiveness or there's a conflict, that will come. And all of these things are really a part of the meditation. It's not like you get rid of these and then you can meditate. That's not the practice.
So I'm not really clear. When you're saying feeling of sadness comes up, are you saying allow yourself to get sad and cry, or are you saying...
You could get cry if crying comes. You just let yourself feel it. And you note sad. If you feel it fully, you might cry, or you might be sad, and then after a little while, you label it sad, and you say, I hate feeling sad, and it changes to hating, or sad, and it dissolves, or sad, and then all of a sudden you realize that you feel very lonely, and the sadness is gone, and what's there is lonely. You feel that for a bit, and it goes away, and then you go back to your breath.
Well, but I misunderstood. I thought what you said, that man over there, was it's about remembering. So.
Remembering means to be here, to recognize.
Right. So mm-hmm. I thought, I'm watching my breath, and then I have a feeling, mm-hmm. and I name it, and mm-hmm. I go back to my breath.
Yeah, and no. If the feeling is there, you let go of the breath, just as with body sensation. You name it as long as it's present. When it disappears, then you go back to your breath. Okay? So that's a little bit different, and I just didn't communicate it well. To be with each thing fully.
I don't know whether I did this right. I was just categorizing emotions into anger, pain, fear, one of these, mm-hmm. and I was doing pain. And I thought, this isn't pain, this is angry. And so I went angry. Mm-hmm. And it was almost magical how it changed, and then there was an excitement. So I went to excitement, mm-hmm. and that went to calm.
Terrific.
But. Somewhere in there, should I have returned to the brain?
No, if those things... That was really juicy. There was a lot going on, so you could be aware of that. Similarly, in the body, you might note a pain in your knee or something, pain, and all of a sudden your hip starts to hurt. And so you feel that because it's quite strong, still going on. And then you feel a contraction, and you note the contraction, and then it sort of dissipates, and then you go back to the breath. So if it dissolves right away, then you go back to the breath. But if one feeling is followed by another that's strong, you could stay with it for a bit, just as you did. That's perfect.
I didn't stay with it for a bit. I stayed with it the whole rest. I never did get back.
It's fine. That's all right. If there's strong feelings, just certain sittings, you may have a lot of body sensations. Certain times you may have a great deal of emotions. Other times you'll be much more with the breath. Now, if you feel like you're getting lost, that it's just getting too much, and often people in the beginning will have this experience, God, the breath and sounds and what should I be doing? If that is happening, go back to the breath and just be aware of the breath, and only leave it if something is really strong and you can't avoid it. But if you're able to be aware, actually the point is to be aware of what's present. Breath is one of those things. It may be half the time that you're here. Other time it will be sensation or feeling. They're all good. All right, let us just finish then. What's important, and this gives you something to practice or work with in this week ahead, is not so much the experience that you're aware of, but that you're beginning to develop this capacity to see and to face what is here. This is what develops what's called in meditation a greatness of heart, a capacity to live in the present. And somebody on this earth, as I said, needs to face greed and fear and hatred and anger and delusion and all those forces that create war and create so much sorrow on this earth. If we want to make any difference, somebody has to be willing to understand them and face them and see, what is that in myself before I go and try and change the world around? What is anger about? What does fear feel like? What is prejudice or delusion or grief or boredom? And to become fearless in the middle of it. Fearless doesn't mean that you don't have fear. Fearless means simply that you're really able to live your life and open to it in a direct way. And that's a wonderful thing about practice, is that through it, our capacity to feel and live and be alive grows. I want to end by reading a poem from Pablo Neruda, who is the Chilean poet who won the Nobel Prize, called Keeping Quiet. Now we will count to 12 and we will all keep still. For once on the face of this earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for a second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment. Without rush, without engines, we would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars of gas, wars with fire, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers and sisters in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving, and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us, as when everything seems dead in winter and later proves to be alive. Now I'll count up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go. It's a beautiful poem. It's really a poem about beginning to listen to these things which make up our life. And that's the next step in this process of meditation. Work with a daily sitting during this next week. Again, you don't learn it by coming here. This is the piano lesson, and you have to go home and practice. That's all. It makes it valuable. Otherwise, it's just entertainment in some fashion. Find a regular time and a regular place. If it's complicated, just go back to the breath. But if strong moods or feelings come, let those be part of what you work with. I'll tell you one last story and then we go. My teacher Ajahn Chah, who I studied with, used to sit around and receive guests. And when I was going through a hard period in my practice, I didn't know how to label doubting very well early on. I was just having a hard time. And I went to him and I complained. I said, you don't even seem so enlightened to me. I mean, place doesn't run so well and you talk all the time to these visitors. What kind of enlightened teacher are you? And he said, well, it's good that I don't seem enlightened to you. I said, yeah, how come? I wanted to go and leave and try a different monastery. Maybe I go to a Burmese monastery, which is like how telling an Israeli you're going to go to an Arab monastery or something. But he thought it was pretty funny, you know, because Asians don't say those things. What do you mean you're not enlightened? I said, well, you don't seem that. He said, it's a good thing. Because if I appeared enlightened to you, you'd still be caught in thinking you could find it outside of yourself. You can't find it. The Buddha's not out here, he said. The only place you can find the Buddha is if you go back and sit in your own heart, in your own relation to life. It's not a process of imitation. It's really a process of discovery. And you are invited to do that through your practice.
This concludes the third class on the inner art of meditation. Our program continues with the fourth class in this five-part series with Jack Kornfield.
There's a story of Mullah Nasruddin, the Sufi fool and wise man and comedian and all of that. He was out one day on his hands and knees, it was in the evening actually, under a lamppost, looking around in the sand for something. And a friend came by and said, Mullah, what are you looking for? And he said, I've lost my key. So the friend got down on his hands and knees, and they looked for a long time through the sand, found nothing. Finally, his friend said, Mullah, where exactly did you lose it? And he said, well, actually, I lost it in the house, but there's more light out here. And in some way, in our culture and in our lives, even though that sounds kind of idiotic, we've been idiots of many kinds in our lives, we do that in that we look for solutions to the problem of our happiness or our fulfillment or coming to deep contentment or wakefulness or love or whatever in the wrong place, outside, getting the right job, relationship, amount of money, clothes, weighing the right amount, more or less, or all these things. We look outside as if that is really going to solve the question of human happiness. And it doesn't get solved there. It's really solved in the heart and no place else. And you probably know as well as I do, people who are prosperous, rich, all kinds of blessings, who are happy, and people who are rich and prosperous and all kinds of blessings who are miserable. And on the other hand, people who have very little, who in that are still happy. And those who have very little and who have great difficulties outwardly and are miserable. And it's not a function of what's out there as much at all as how we relate to it. It's inside that we discover fear and greed and aggression and love and communion and the possibilities of living in some really conscious or awakened way. There's one more story I'll tell you of Mullah Nasruddin. He went in the bank one day to cash a check. And they said to him, could you please identify yourself? So he reached in his pocket and he pulled out a small mirror and he said, yep, that's me all right. We have these ideas about ourselves, often very limited. I'm a smart person or I'm not so smart, or I'm an extrovert or an introvert, or a kind person or unkind, or I have these qualities and not those, that we've learned that are conditioned really from very early. And to begin to meditate is to look into ourselves and discover what's really there, apart from all our ideas and questions and the structures that we made of ourselves, but to discover in a deeper way what is possible in our life, what is possible in our hearts. Now, the first thing, as I said in the beginning of the classes, the first thing that's necessary is simply to come and be present with ourselves, and that's why we started with the breath. Let me take a couple more minutes of questions or comments about what happened in your sitting this past week, and then we'll go on with our sitting and instruction and so forth. We got up to working with breath, body sensations, and then moods and emotions. Anyone else like to describe what happened or have questions? Please.
Well, when I was meditating today, something really strange happened with like my body feelings. It got to feel like, I got to feel really huge. Like, and it was like I was a piece of wood or stone, and immense in size, and it reminded me of experiences I had when I was a child, like in bed, and I'd be sitting in bed for long periods of time, and I'd get those same weird feelings, and it was scary.
Yes.
And there was a feeling of nausea that went along with it, and I was thinking of opening my eyes and checking out of the meditation, and I just said, okay, just, I sort of had to reassure myself that my body didn't look like that, even though I didn't look.
Like Mr. Potato Man. Yeah.
And so I just stuck with it, and it went away.
Uh-huh. Did you name it? Were you able to do that
nausea,
at all?
Nausea,
nausea. Nausea, nausea. Uh-huh. Terrific. Fantastic. What you experienced was one of 100 different side effects that happen. Generally, they happen when we start to get quiet, or when we start to get concentrated, or when our senses somehow become more open in an inner way. And sometimes your body feels light and you have to open your eyes to peek and make sure you're still sitting on the ground. Sometimes it's heavy, it feels like stone or metal. Sometimes your breath feels like it's breathing over here or your nose is over there, or you feel hot. And there is sometimes release of heat. There's a practice in Tibetan yoga called Tummo where you develop inner heat. And the monks would go out in the winter time and sit on the snow outside the monasteries and put wet blankets over their shoulders and see who could dry the blanket first with their body heat, just as kind of meditation contest. And this is really true. So sometimes you get release of tremendous heat or waves of cold. You get visions, you see lights and images that arise. And initially when all these things and many other side effects come, there can be a little bit of fright, like what's happening? It's out of control. I'm not, governing my life as I'd like to. In fact, it's always out of control. I mean, look at your mind. You say, don't think. Does it listen? Or please don't feel unpleasant feelings. I just want to feel love and happiness and joy and contentment. Does it listen? Your heart beats all by itself. You don't control it, thank God. Your liver does all the things it needs to. And so part of what you see as you meditate is the truth that most of our life is a stream that goes along that we don't direct. Initially, there's a little anxiety, quite natural. Simply, you could even note that. You could note anxious a bit, and then that'll pass away. And then sometimes it gets pleasant. You say, well, this is kind of far out. Let's see what it's like to be a stone or be huge or be tiny or something. And then the next danger comes after you're finished with the fear is that you start to like it and you get attached. And you say, well, let's see, next time I sit, maybe I could do that again. If I breathe this way and sit just like I did before, I'll get it to come back. The key to working with the variety of unusual side effects is to do just what you said, to sit with them, to name them as best you can, see them for what they are, which is another play of the bodily senses, see the reaction if there is one, and then continue. You did very well with that. It may come back or you may get a different thing instead. You never know what's going to come when you sit. You just sort of sit down and take what you get. Good. Someone else, please.
At one point I felt very anxious and I labeled it just like you said, and it subsided.
Mm-hmm.
I was pleased by that. But another night I was very, very tired and I found it impossible to sit. I tried, it just could not do it. So I said, this is it, 3 weeks straight. I've had it, I can't do it.
Uh-huh. You did it every other night for 3 weeks, but the one that you were exhausted, you're probably ahead of most people in the class. So that's terrific.
Yeah, but why did I find it so terribly difficult to sit when I was that tired?
Because you were really exhausted, and it's natural. One of the things about sleep consciousness, which I said, I think, last week or the week before, is it doesn't have the ability to hold the body up. And when you get really exhausted, it isn't the best time to meditate. It's a good time to sleep, and then you could meditate when you wake up. So what you did intuitively was actually quite fine. All right, let's do our first sitting again for tonight. So find a way to sit which is comfortable and stable, where you feel that you can hold your body relatively still for this time. We'll sit about 15 minutes or so. And we'll continue with the instructions from last week, and then later on in the evening add or elaborate further to them. So when you sat up, steady and comfortable, let your eyes close gently. Let your back be straight enough so your breath can be easy and open. And first just come into your body and become aware of what is present for you. The reflection of the day in some sense. If there's obvious tension that you notice, you can soften that, letting the eyes and face be soft or the jaw relax. Letting the shoulders, arms, and hands be relaxed. Letting go in the chest and the belly. Let the belly be soft. Notice whatever mood is present. Agitated, sleepy, peaceful. Just get a sense of it without judgment. And then in the midst of that, there are certain feelings, perhaps thoughts, sensations. Become aware again of the fact that you are breathing, of this movement of life breath. And use the movement of breath, feeling its sensations, letting it breathe itself, whatever rhythms it would like, as a way to bring the mind and body together, to be here in the present moment. As you pay attention to the breath, if there arise any strong sensations in the body or any obvious moods, happy, sad, fearful, delighted, name what arises, leaving the breath aside and receiving that sensation or state of mind with the same open attention that you've used to watch the breath. Give it a label, itching, tingling, tinkling, sad, sad, whatever it is, and see what happens to it as you observe it. Does it continue for a while? Does it get stronger? Does it disappear? Stay with it, feeling it until it does pass away or you've been with it for some time. And then return back to be centered on the next breath. if you notice the mind has wandered off to fantasy or memory, when you're aware of that, let go of it and return back again to the breath or sensation that's here in the present moment. be aware of what is present, noticing with a gentle, careful attention. One more minute. How was that to come back together as a group and to sit again? It's easier? Mm-hmm. Please.
Yeah, I've been finding several times, after about 15 minutes, my body just involuntarily stopped.
Just
stretching,
get up.
And, you know, and it's like, and then I realize what I've done.
What happens probably is that you have a kind of attack of restlessness. You're sitting there and paying attention to your breath, or your mind may be wandering or wherever it is, and your body starts to feel a little bit restless. And usually, what's interesting is that this is really what happens often in our life. Usually, unbeknownst to us, without any conscious choice, we find ourselves down at the ice cream parlor eating away, and then we wake up and say, boy, I must have been having a really hard time at home doing whatever that was. And the body picked itself up and took itself down to some other place. So that's not really uncommon in our life. And in this case, it's probably that kind of restless energy. What you might do is, when you get about 15 minutes into it, is start to listen or feel more attentively. Now, I wonder what's going to happen today near the end of it, and see if you can begin to pay attention to it and maybe even name it again, so that you can learn to be conscious about it rather than it happen without being conscious. Please.
there's things that I have my mind on that I kind of, even when I consciously saying to myself, okay, I got to not think, I got to not plan what I got to do this weekend, and I try to think about what I'm doing here, it's very difficult for me sometimes, I found especially this week, because I guess that maybe reflects, you say, what your week has been like too.
Yeah, that, again, it makes very good sense. If your life is very busy, and you have a lot going on, and you're in the middle of planning many things, then when you sit, that process will continue. You try to let go of it. You can even talk with it a little bit. Listen, I'll plan you in a little bit. Just give me 15 minutes break, and when I get done, I'll think you plenty. You can really have a little dialogue with that. And it says, no, I want to do it now. I say, listen, we'll take plenty of time. We'll think about the weekend and who we're going to see and what we're going to do. And sometimes that helps a little bit. Other times it won't. You'll do that, but there'll still be such a compelling feeling that you need to do it that it will keep arising anyway. And in that case, you just need to be kind about it and see that that's what's going on, and maybe every other part of your awareness will be the breath, and alternating with that will be planning. And you just see that there's quite a bit of planning. Usually, when there's a lot of planning, there's a feeling underneath it as well, and sometimes it's helpful to be aware of that. Do you know what feeling is present? Anxiety. That's right. Generally, there's anxiety or some fear, and then we go off planning. Since you know that, you might try to listen in a deeper way, not just to the story of what you're going to do in the weekend or whatever's ahead, but you might try to feel that feeling and acknowledge it. Note anxious, anxious, or fear, fear. And in accepting that, the thoughts may not need to think themselves so much. Remember last week, I believe I said that if you pay attention to moods or feelings, they don't last so long, maybe just 15 seconds or a dozen or 15 labels worth. Did anybody notice if that was so for themselves? Some people found that. All right, let's take about a 5-minute break then. We can come back together again.
This concludes tape 4. Our program continues with tape 5.